Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the tire.
Well, good morning, everybody in Australia, and good afternoon for those in America that are tuning in. This is Pauline Ryland, Intimacy Whisperer, and we are on Coach on Fire live radio, and we're about to talk to my special guest this morning, Rochelle Menzies. So today is no different to any other day. I'm super excited to be chatting with Rochelle. She's been working extensively in the health and community sector for over 10 years and in particular has an interest in the women's health sector with a focus on sexuality, education and substance use. She's currently delivering inclusivity training and consultancy for service providers and community members in the LGBTI communities. So we've got lots of interesting avenues to explore and discuss with Rochelle in just a moment. So if you're in the US and you would like to dial in and ask us a question, you just need to ring in on area code 646-716-7979 or 425-292-4444. If you're in Australia and you want to ask us questions, you need to jump onto Facebook and go to my Intimacy Whisperer business page and ask your questions there. We don't have a live call-in, unfortunately, because this is all set up in the States. I will try and keep an eye on any questions, but for some reason, my phone's not allowing me to go into my page. But that's okay. We've got a producer on the other end, so he'll prompt me if there's any questions. So we're live on the Sunshine Coast, Queensland. We have been enduring a heat wave and we've had some lovely, delicious, yummy rain, and it's a little bit cooler today, which I think everyone's happy about. So I'll remind you of those numbers to call in on shortly, but let's get started and have a chat and welcome Rochelle. So welcome, Rochelle, to Coach on Fire live radio. How are you?
I am absolutely fantastic, and thanks so much for having me on the show this morning.
My pleasure.
Or this afternoon on the other side of the world.
That's right. It's been hard to keep up. We'll just keep it, for Australia. It gets too challenging. When they say, I've sent it Friday, it's like, oh, that's Thursday. I get very confused. So,
exactly.
So welcome. And I can't exactly remember how we connected, probably via Facebook, no doubt. I do recall you actually contacting me and wanting to meet up with me for a coffee because you were curious about my work and having a chat with me. And it's interesting when I was reflecting on how we connected, because I don't normally meet anyone for coffee. I'm like, nah, talk to me on the phone. What do you want? So I very rarely take that space to go and meet and do the coffee thing. And I'm really glad that I did do that and meet up with you, because we had a lot of things that we could talk about, and there was, we're in the same industry but on different paths and doing slightly different things. So it was really, really good to talk to you and get to know you, and I think we'll be connected for a long time and probably do work together at some point, which would be pretty exciting.
Yes, it would be. And thank you for taking that time out to have that coffee with me.
Yeah, I think it was definitely a good thing. So lots of things to ask you, and I'm trying to decide where I want to start. And I think probably let's start with currently. I know that you're always off travelling around the place, mainly in Queensland, but I could be wrong. You could correct me there. But you're doing trainings, and I think your trainings are probably a little bit different to what we would imagine trainings are about. And what I do know that it is connected with the LGBTI community and training different people within that industry, whether it's just general people or is it with and with service providers. So I'd love you to just sort of tell me a little bit about that and maybe also explain what LGBTI stands for, because I'm sure there's somebody out there that's got no clue, although most people are pretty up with it these days, but you never know. So that would be a good thing to start with, what that is. And then just give me a bit of an idea about what this training is about and what you're actually teaching and who you're teaching.
Sure.
That would be really cool.
Yeah.
Thank
Not
you.
A problem. So if we start with LGBTI, so it stands, and sometimes you'll see, you know, Q and P and A and a whole range of other letters included.
Yeah.
But basically it's around diverse sexuality and gender identity and intersex status. So if we're looking at the, you know, the LGBT and I, LG and B are lesbian, gay and bisexual. So that's around diverse sexuality. Mm. T is for transgender. So that's around diverse gender identity, and I is for intersex. So intersex is a naturally occurring variance of sex characteristics. So people who can not easily being defined as male or female. So it is really around that diversity of sexual orientation, gender identity, and diverse bodies when it comes to the sex that people are assigned at birth. That's kind of who we're talking about, really. And most of the work that I do is primarily with service providers. So I've been doing this work for about 10 years and 8 mm-hmm. years in the role that I'm in currently as the Training and Development Coordinator at the Queensland AIDS Council. And it's really, if it boils down to, it's about reducing homophobia and transphobia and discrimination in services, so that LGBTI people feel safe to access any service that they go to. We do have anti-discrimination laws right across this country and also in each individual state. But sometimes people actually don't know the very subtle ways that they might be discriminating against individuals that are actually accessing their services. So they are predominantly health and community sector. There's currently a national training package going around the country, particularly for the aged care sector. So that's about increasing their capacity to work with LGBT elders as they start to access either, you know, in-home community care services or residential care. So occasionally we also do work with community members themselves. So I sometimes do sessions with, LGBTI people, particularly young people. And it could be around, you know, safer sex discussions. It could be around identity. It could be around, you know, accessing services and, you know, disclosing their identity to service providers and how to do that. But the majority of the work that I do in my day job is really around working with, any service actually that's out there that wants to become more inclusive. And also the consultancy side is really around supporting those services to gather all the evidence that they need if they want to go for the national LGBTI accreditation called Rainbow Tick.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
Wow.
So that's why you see me chuffing all over the state.
Yeah. Yeah. This is amazing work that you're doing. And it's incredible, like you say, about creating that inclusivity for everybody and not having a separation. And it just reminds me, when you said something earlier, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it reminds me of a state people go, oh, I'm not racist, however. Or I'm not racist, but, well, shit, yes, you are, because you've made the statement that you're not racist, and then you put it cancels out in language, it cancels out everything you said beforehand, and then it's like going into the jugular. So it's about catching people and having that awareness, and I love that this work is something that you're doing, because in my work, you know, in the different trainings I've had, in particular in as a sexological body worker, which is different to sexologists, and we'll get into that in a bit, it's really, again, all about inclusivity and, inclusivity of all the diverse options or availabilities and things that are out there for the different people in every aspect, you know. And all the things that you mentioned, you know, with their sexual partners, how they identify with themselves. So it's really about just embracing the being and supporting the being in whatever way they want to express themselves sexually. And I guess the ultimate part of that is to being able to express themselves in a healthy way. And
exactly.
In a way that they can love themselves and feel comfortable within who they are. And so when you're coming from, I guess, what is predominantly, I would imagine, a more of a minority, you know, you're not the general standard man, woman, you know, relationship and relating, it can create a much bigger impact, because that's not how society is taught and how we're grown up and how we're educated. So it is such valuable work that you're doing. It's really awesome, and I love that there's people like yourself out there doing the work and creating and paving that way for the future generations.
And I think it's a really I think it's a really good point, is that we're actually, you know, we're not brought up to know how to be gay or lesbian or transgender. We're not brought up knowing how to have a same-sex relationship. So that the messages that society gives us are very much around that everybody is heterosexual, and everybody that their sex that they're assigned at birth and their gender will align, and that that makes invisible the people that are different, that don't fit within that message that society gives us. And a lot of the people that I train, they come to me afterwards and they go, oh, I didn't know this, or I didn't know that, or I didn't realize that these things that I would do, that I was doing, were actually making other people uncomfortable, or I don't understand why people don't disclose to me. And once you sort of talk about the discrimination that LGBTI people face on a daily basis, and then the impact that it has on their health, people start to realize. And as I say, you know, we don't know what we don't know. And
that's
it's
right.
Only quite through education that we have these little light bulb moments, and that we can actually, you know, change the way that we do things.
Yeah. And it would be really great if at some point you could get this sort of teaching and I don't know, workshops or whatever, into the school system, you know, so we can start educating. And I mean, I know from my perspective, I really want to get into the school system to start teaching, you know, that generation of what it is about sex and relationships and intimacy, that they've got no idea, because they're just drowning in porn. And we've got girls, you know, as young as 12 and 13 giving blowjobs to guys to get favors and get in with them, and they haven't even had a kiss. And, oh, it's a good thing, because they spoke to me after I gave them a blowjob. And it's that mentality that just does my head in. So imagine, maybe that's something we need to talk about, that we can combine forces and go in and talk about that, and talk about the LGBTI and that whole inclusivity, and not making people and shaming people because they're wrong or they're different from you, but to embrace everybody, because we are all different, and it's about really keeping your heart open and leaving prejudices out. And it's sad when we're still in this era, 2017, and there's still prejudices around there.
It's really unfortunate. And I mean, there's certainly, you know, there are some great programs out there. I mean, the Safer Schools program is absolutely amazing. But unfortunately, here in Queensland, it has not been embraced as broadly as it possibly could. And there's certainly been a lot of backlash. And, you know, it's about creating that environment in a school where an LGBTI young person feels safe just to be themselves. Some of it also does include education within the school system. And, you know, we have a national sexuality curriculum, which is actually really quite good. But unfortunately, it all comes down to the individual principal in each school as to what education can be provided. There's some great things happening in schools, and the new Queensland Sexual Health Strategy has had some really, really good information in that, around ensuring that particularly school-based youth health nurses are supported to provide really good education to young people. But as I said, it always does come back to the individual school. So it's that does make it quite difficult when there are some great programs out there that can be rolled out in every school. But it's not mandatory. So, you know, each school must do something, but they can pick and choose out of that curriculum what they want to do.
And
you know, there's been
a really
great
wide selection.
Yeah, definitely. And I know I used to provide sexuality education in schools, but it was from an organisation that was fee for service. So many schools were like, well, we just don't want to pay the money for that. Some schools paid for it, some PNCs paid for it, some schools charged the parents for it. They had great programs, but I can remember the difficulty that we always had in just getting a foot in the door in some schools.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's an ongoing issue, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it's something that will always probably be an ongoing issue, but it's great when we've got people like yourself that are crusading and you know, working diligently. And, you know, at some point there's going to be a shift. There's already a shift, you know. I definitely see it in my world, you know, when I first started working in this industry 6 years ago, and the judgment and that I got from people that I was working as an intimacy and sex coach. And, you know, that judgment, I was really aware that came from their stuff that they were carrying around their own intimacy and sex and all of that. And so I learned very quickly to just grow a very thick skin and go, you know what, I'm not stopping what I'm doing because I really believe in the work that I'm doing and I just want to keep growing with it and growing with it. And it's so much more accepted and so much more embraced. I can see the shift in just this 6 years of doing this work, how much easier it is for me to speak about this. You know, I mean, I'm talking at Mind Body Spirit Festival on intimacy and sex and relationships. So it's being embraced on the wider community. So that's what I hope to see in the work that you're doing, that it is embraced more on the wider community and it's just something that is discussed and that's open. And especially for younger people going through, you know, that are coming up and facing, you know, when they come into their own awarenesses around their own sexuality, which starts at around that puberty point, sometimes younger, but they're not sure what that is. But I know in my experience with some young people that I worked with, you know, around puberty, and they really had the awareness, and not being able to express that to anybody is also a very frustrating thing.
Definitely.
Hold you back. It's like someone putting a, you know, imagine if you couldn't do the work that you were doing, Rochelle, and it's like someone holding a big heavy hand on your head going, no, you can't quite do that. You can't quite do that. You can't quite be you.
Yeah,
and you
exactly.
Just want to like break those chains and go, F off, yes, this is who I am and this is what I want to do. So I can't even begin to imagine what they go through with that suppression that they feel. So awesome work you're doing.
It comes from lots of different places as well. You know, sometimes it does. It comes from within the school environment. Sometimes, and many, many times it does come from within the family. But I'm certainly seeing, just as you are, a real shift that we have parents now who are much to their child just loving whoever they love, to their child just being whoever they are. And your parents are starting to recognise gender diversity at a younger age, whereas in the past it would have just been, no, you're supposed to be this particular way and that's all there is to it.
Yeah.
There's so much more information and education out there just for parents in general and the wider community that we are seeing a greater awareness. And I think sometimes a lot of people think that because of that, everything's okay now. But unfortunately, you know, that's not the case. We are still seeing young people committing suicide because they don't think their family or friends are going to accept them for who they are. So we've come a long, long way. But there's still certainly some work for you and I to do in the future, Pauline.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. And I just had a question on. Oh, I know what I wanted to ask you. So let's give some contacts and links. Of where people can go to for support if they're going to listen in now or they're listening in later on the replay and they're like, oh, maybe I need to talk to somebody. Before I do that, I just want to quickly plug the phone-in number again. If you're in the state, you can dial in on area code 646-716-7979. And if you're in Aussie land, you can jump on my business page, Intimacy Whisperer, and ask questions there. I have been able to get onto my page on my phone. So that would be good. So Rochelle, if there are some young people that are going through, I don't know where I'm at, what's going on with me, I need to talk to somebody, I need a safe space to speak, where would be the first point of contact for them to go to talk and connect with?
I think that probably one of the best resources that we have is QLife, which is an after-hours telephone counselling service, which is the telephone counsellors are LGBTI people themselves who are fully trained, and it's a national telephone counselling service. So here in Queensland, it's run by an organisation called Diverse Voices, who were previously Gay and Lesbian Welfare Association. So they are on the phones from about 3:30 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon till midnight every day, and they have an extensive referral list. So, you know, it's a national phone line. So if the counsellors here in Brisbane are busy, then they can be ensured that somewhere in another state someone will answer the phone, and they all run from the same database. So even if the councillor's not in Queensland, say a New South Wales councillor picks up the phone, they actually have access to the same information. So they can refer through to whatever services are in that person's local community. Here in Queensland, specific LGBTI youth programs, we have Open Doors based in Brisbane, and we have QSpace, or Expanded Horizons, which is based at the Gold Coast. And unfortunately, apart from that, there's nothing that is LGBTI specific. But what we do see is a lot of the different Headspace organisations, there are several of them that are running LGBTI support groups within their service. And there's also a couple of PCYCs are actually also running LGBTI support groups as well, which is absolutely fantastic to see. The other probably really good resource, particularly people are struggling with relationships, say with their family, then Relationships Australia Queensland, they have what's called the Rainbow Counselling Service, and they have a trained rainbow counsellor in every single one of their offices across the state. They've just finished training, probably I think it's another 60 people, because, you know, we know people move from organisation to organisation. So from time to time, there may not be a counsellor in a specific office because they've moved on. But every couple of years, they do another round of training, and they've only just finished one late last year. So they're pretty much should be able to guarantee a rainbow rep in almost every Relationships Australia Queensland office. So that's a couple of really good resources that are there. And particularly, you know, I really promote QLife because they have such an extensive list. They have ambassadors across the state in regional areas who feed information back to QLife about which services in their local community are inclusive. So whether they're counsellors or psychologists or therapists or organisations, they gather that information from their local community and feed that back to QLife so that they've got a constantly updated database of resources.
Wow, that's fantastic. So those sort of sites would be more recommended for younger generation. What about for parents that are suddenly, or is it across the board for everybody?
It's pretty much across the board for everyone.
Anyone, yeah.
Particularly QLife and Relationships Australia.
Yeah.
If we're looking at parents, PFLAG, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, they're absolutely fantastic. They have a main office based in Brisbane, but they quite often do have members who are parents themselves who have been through this with their own children or with other family members who can offer supports in regional areas. So people ring PFLAG in Brisbane and they will be able to put them in contact with a PFLAG rep in their local area. And that's based on that peer support model. So it's always so empowering to have that contact with someone who's been where you're at. And they've come out the other side and, you know, they've supported that family member, whether it's their child or a sibling or even a parent who is, you know, exploring their sexuality or transitioning their gender. There's some great supports there. And even though it says Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, they do also work with parents of trans children in particular. And they often have their own separate little catch up because some of their issues are quite different. So there is some great supports out there, and
that one's particularly
useful.
And
that one's really good.
I love that you are just like this walking encyclopedia of information. I mean, that is just like, your knowledge is massive. So anyone got questions, they could contact you direct? So how do we contact you, Rochelle, if people actually want to ask you questions or, and feel like they've listened to you and they're resonating with you, they want to talk to you first before branching out to maybe one of these other,
sure,
other organisations? Well, how do they find you?
Well, I work at the Queensland AIDS Council based in their Brisbane office. So probably the mm-hmm. best way to get me is via email at rmenzies, M-E-N-Z-I-E-S, at quac.org.au. Because as you said, I'm on the road a lot. I am notoriously
yeah.
known for forgetting to turn my work mobile phone on or taking it with me. So email
well,
is a much better
helpful.
Way to contact me.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I'm not stuck to my mobile phone like a lot of other people. And actually, it's probably sitting on my desk at the office at the moment, turned off. So I do check my emails every single day. People can also contact me via Facebook as well. Just Rochelle
yeah.
Menzies. They'll find me there. And
do you have
that
a
way,
business
then I can
page on
Facebook messages.
Yeah, do you
Sorry?
Have a business page? Do you have a business page on Facebook?
For the LGBTI stuff and the stuff I do for the Queensland AIDS Council, that is just the Rochelle Menzies profile.
Yeah. Sure.
For the other stuff, the clinical sexology, then there is the Sensual Potential Facebook page. And there's also the Love is Respectful Relationships Facebook page as well.
Great. Awesome.
Yeah. So people can contact me on Facebook in three different ways.
Yeah, excellent.
And yeah, I'm quite happy to answer questions, in all of those different ways, or even via email at the Queensland AIDS Council as well.
Great. Fantastic. Thank you. So
no worries.
I wanted to ask you have some very interesting awards, and I want to know what they're about. So
sure.
you've written to me that you have an award for the Brisbane Queen's Ball Volunteer Award that you won in 2010. So can you just explain to me a little bit and to everybody that's listening what that award's actually about and what it represents?
Sure. So the Queen's Ball has been, it's the longest running LGBTI event in the world, apparently.
Oh,
and
wow.
it's coming up. Yes, it's every, it used to be the long weekend in June, not a long weekend anymore, but the ball's still happening. It's coming up to its 56th year this year.
Wow.
And they, for many, many years, it was a ball and LGBTI awards. So there's awards around a whole range of different areas. And in 2010, I was lucky enough to receive the Volunteer of the Year award. At that time, I was living and working on the Sunshine Coast. I had been running particularly lesbian social events and support groups since 2001. I started out running those in Gympie, and then when I moved to the Sunshine Coast, running those there. I was involved with the Sunshine Coast Pride Festival in starting that up, which, funnily enough, is happening on the 25th of February, and it will be the 10th anniversary of the Sunshine Coast Pride Festival.
Oh, right. Okay.
So I would definitely be popping along to that and working on the Queensland AIDS Council stall. And I think that was a even though I wasn't very well known in Brisbane, the work that I was doing, the volunteering that I was doing had actually come onto everybody's radar. I also volunteered with the Queensland AIDS Council before working there on their board and also part of their Lesbian Health Action Group as well. So volunteering has been something that's always been really important to me. I think it comes back from watching my mum do Meals on Wheels when I was quite young. So all of my life I have volunteered. I started out volunteering as a teenager. I didn't play sport, but I would go and visit elderly people in their homes as part of our community campaign that we had at our school. And that just kind of continued throughout my life, volunteering at my children's school, in my local community. And when I got involved with the LGBTI community at the ripe old age of 40, some of us are late bloomers.
Yes, we are.
That became the community that I started to volunteer in. So I've been volunteering and running events and support groups for about 5 years at that point.
That's very deserved award, because you're definitely, you're living and breathing what you're teaching. And I think that's fantastic, so everything there is, really aligned within you and your being. And I think that's, you're walking your talk or talking your walk, whatever way the saying goes.
Yeah.
Not sure, it doesn't matter. And I think that's, you know, really commendable, and I love what you're doing. And the other award that you have is the Hero of the Sunshine Coast. That sounds pretty cool. What was that about? That was in 2014.
Yeah, well, that one was a little bit of a shock, actually, because I had moved from living on the Sunshine Coast in about 2006, but I continued to work there until 2012. And that was an acknowledgement of all the work that I had done while I was living and working on the Sunshine Coast. So I still ran, even though my job was there based in the Queensland AIDS Council office in Maroochydore, I still ran social and support groups in the evenings. As I said, still like to volunteer. So that, I think it was when I moved away, nobody really took that up again straight away. So if there was about 12 months or so that there wasn't a lot happening on the coast, and I think that's when people go, oh, we really miss that. So I was, you know, extremely proud to have been given that award, and particularly considering I wasn't living on the coast at the time, but it was lovely to have been acknowledged for, you know, the work that I had done while I was living and working there. And I think that's something that, you know, when you volunteer, you don't go looking for even thank yous.
No.
And it's always such a shock when you are acknowledged for the work that you do. It's such a lovely surprise. And it's certainly not the reason that you do that volunteering work, because it's generally most people do it because it's about wanting to give back when they have been supported in the past, and they see that they're at a place where they want to support others in whatever way that they want to do that. So that was actually a really, really, really lovely award. And an extra surprise on the day was that my daughter had said, you know, this is great, Mum, so proud of you. Sorry, I can't be there. And when I got up on the stage, there was my daughter and my grandsons waving at me from the crowd. So that was an extra lovely surprise.
Yeah, nice. That's lovely. And I think it's that thing about, you know, you do what you do, and you're not expecting acknowledgement or any sort of, you know, recognition, because you're just in it doing it because that's what you do. And it's that whole thing about giving back. And there's a term I used to use in a teaching that I followed called Maku. So Maku is very much about that, the spirit of giving and the spirit of generosity, and what you, it's that whole thing of what you put out, you get back. But I think it's that acknowledgement that you receive, because, you know, when we're doing the work that we do, we're just doing it. You know, we don't do it for the acknowledgement. So it's really lovely when something comes along, in this instance for you, you know, having an award. You know, that's amazing. That's a huge acknowledgement. But even when friends or family will randomly give you an acknowledgement, it makes you feel like, wow, yeah, I am doing the right thing, and thank you. And you go into that place of gratitude. I know for myself, the other week I met up with someone briefly. We went off somewhere and hadn't seen her for ages, and I got this gorgeous message from her on Facebook, you know, saying it was so lovely to see me, and really honouring and acknowledging the work that I do and the difference that I'm making. And it's like, when you get that back, you sort of go, wow, you know, you stop for a minute and go, yeah, I guess I am making a difference. But on a day-to-day basis, you're just getting out there and doing your thing. So when someone takes their time out and just says something to you and acknowledges, it's like, wow, you know what, let's just breathe that in and really feel it in my being, and know that this is what my path is. And like yourself, I started on my journey pretty old as well. maybe that's why we're so successful with it, because we know that this is what we're meant to be doing, and that we've had a lifetime of getting to this point. So
yeah,
I think that,
exactly. And I think that, yeah, you know, I did take it. I took a little bit a step back from volunteering a couple of years ago. When I started doing my master's, I was traveling a lot for work, and I was having three new grandchildren being born, and I wanted to spend time with them. So,
yeah.
And I had a new relationship. So it was like, I think I need to step back a little bit. But funnily enough, even though I stepped back for a lot of the volunteering I was doing in the LGBTI community, I still volunteered with my local domestic violence service. So there seems to be, I'm going, no, I'm not volunteering anymore, but, you know, truth was, I still was in some form, but it was just different, and it wasn't as time consuming as some of the other stuff that I'd done. So I think sometimes it's just a part of of who some people are, and definitely we don't know the impact that we have on others just by being our authentic selves and doing what we're passionate about in our lives.
That's exactly it. You hit it on the head there, and you know, we don't know who we're impacting. Sometimes we get told, but not always.
Yeah.
And there's always people in the wings that go, you know, somebody the other day wanted to know business pages. And I said, oh, here's my business page. And he's like, been a fan for years, been following you for years. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Didn't know that, you know. So it's just,
yeah,
those little things. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, it's just seeding it out there and letting it go out into that ripple effect that makes the difference. So you mentioned masters before. So is that to do with being a clinical sexologist? Is that what that's connected to, or is it something different?
It is. No, that's definitely what that is. So it's the masters in sexology through Curtin University in Western Australia.
I was wondering if it was through them, because I think they're the only ones that are actually doing it. So is that an online program that you're doing?
It is.
An online study?
I'm down to my last two subjects. So all the theory's been done, and now it's time for my research. So I'm in the middle of a literature review at the moment, and as soon as uni goes back, that will be 5,000 words and an ethics approval, and then I will be able to do my actual jump into my research in the second half of the year, and hopefully have that all written up and ready to go, and I can graduate in about 12 months' time.
Wow, that's exciting. So how many years is the study to do the sexologist course?
It's at Curtin University, it's 2 years full-time or 4 years part-time. I've stretched mine out to 4.5 years. I did struggle a little bit with statistics and had to do that a second time, so it added an extra 6 months. There is a similar course at Sydney University, and it's the Masters of Sexual Health. And you can actually focus either on counselling, on research, or on education. So you can do three different streams, and it's 12 months full time. But I preferred the content in Western Australia, and the fact that it was quite broad, because when I started, I wasn't really sure if there was a particular area I wanted to focus on. And I've been a sexuality educator for 10 years. I absolutely love that. I didn't really see myself as a counsellor, but as I've gone on this journey, I've had lots and lots of feedback around the fact that a lot of what I do is counselling. And so I've definitely...
Come naturally without...
Yeah, and even my lecturers went, I don't know why you're not a counsellor, and I started thinking about that, and so I had my own little, you know, existential crisis last year where I questioned who I was and what I was doing, and I think I realised it was some of my own self-doubt that was holding me back from moving into the counselling and therapy side of things. So I did my student placement with an amazing sex therapist here in Brisbane, Jocelyn Clogg, and through that process went, yes, I can do this. This is something that I will be doing as well. So I'll be moving into private practice, as I said, next year. I'm still already offering the education side of things. And I will be, when I finish my studies, being an accredited sexuality educator through the Society of Australian Sexologists, and probably doing a couple of other short courses, in particular counselling modalities, to help inform my practice. And once I've got that accreditation and my clinical hours up, then I can also become an accredited psychosexual counsellor as well. So, lots of things in place for the future.
Yeah, well, it's going to be, you know, a pretty amazing journey that you're already on, and I look forward to keeping connected and seeing where you end up with it all, and how your private practice unravels, and how, you know, I see that there's a synergy there with us that we potentially might be able to do something in the future as well, which is pretty cool. And so I just wanted to get really clear, because people often call me a sexologist, and I go, it's too hard to explain. I just go, yeah, okay, but I know I'm not a sexologist. I'm a sexological body worker, and that's the difference in the clue, the body work. So a sexologist, which you're doing, is more around it's talking and counselling and that sort of psychology of whatever's going on for a person. in their situation, whatever that might be.
The difference between you and I is I do talk therapy and you do touch therapy.
Yeah,
and I think that makes it simple for individuals
that
touch therapy can be so important for some clients. That was one of the reasons I connected with you, was that I want to know that I have really good ethical referrals to give to my clients for those that touch therapy is going to be part of that process and that journey for them.
Yeah. And I think, you know, where I was heading was the difference. I mean, you've done a lot more study on the sex psychology of sex, but I think I still draw on my experiences. No, I'm not just a sexological body worker. You know, I've got tantric experience and I've got NLP.
Yes.
So I do combine mind, body, spirit, because I'm always working on mindset with people and getting them in the right headspace and turning around their limiting beliefs and their behaviours, patterning and those sorts of things. And getting them connected to themselves, but I sort of work parallel. So I'm doing that mindset work and the physical work. Sometimes, look, probably 3/4 of the time, I'm not doing any physical work with my coaching clients, but I'm giving them physical work to do at home. But there is a small portion where I will do hands-on work in session, and it will depend on what they're presenting with. And, you know, we definitely need to create reintroduction of the cellular memory imprinting, which is memory, body memory with brain, and that rewiring. So it's quite important for certain aspects. Probably the biggest impact I've seen with that work, body work, is working with men that have premature ejaculation. You know, I've done work with guys that haven't been body work, and I've done it with guys that have included the body work, and it's by far the bigger difference in turnaround, because it's about learning touch and how that translates in your body and rewiring and reworking all of that. So definitely a time and place for the body work. Not always, but you know.
Oh, definitely, definitely there is. And I think, you know, when you're looking at a clinical sexologist, a lot of what we do is around validating the individual. A lot of it's around education, the impact that past messages and experiences have had on the individual. And sometimes that can be such a light bulb moment for them to go, when that happened, then this has led to this, and reframing that. And when they can view those experiences in a different way, quite often that can support them on that journey. But there is also, you know, there are some exercises and things like that we will also give to individuals to do. Particularly for those who are early ejaculators, also for other erectile dysfunction issues that people may be experiencing. So some of the work of a clinical sexologist, a lot of it is definitely based in sexual dysfunction, those sorts of areas, whether it is around pain and penetration disorders, whether it's around orgasm issues, whether it's around function issues such as, early ejaculation, delayed ejaculation, or erectile dysfunction, or inability to orgasm, or a whole range of different things that can be centered quite often in the body. There can be exercises that people will take home to do with themselves. But the other side of it is that, you know, a lot of these issues many do arise just for the individual, but quite often they arise within a relationship. So it's also working with the partner as well, and working with the two individuals and the entity that the relationship is itself.
Yeah.
So some of it is around the dysfunction side of things. Some of it is around relationship issues that people may be having. Some of it's around the relationship the individual may be having with themselves. Maybe there are some body image issues that are affecting, their sexual functioning. So it can be quite broad, but definitely I agree with you that the body is, you know, plays such an important role, and that's where I think that the work that you do is so important for individuals as well. And I think that there is a nice synergy where the two can walk along side by side, and depending on the different experiences that individual counsellors and therapists and body workers have, where they can work together for the benefit of that particular client.
Yes. Well, I've sort of already started working with a psychologist. I've sent a couple of people. I've got a client now that I currently want to send to her because of certain issues. And, you know, I've worked on her on a certain level with the mindset and definitely on the physical, but there's definitely a link. And, you know, so it's great to have people out there that you can work with. I think there are a lot of similarities. We're sort of like same but different would be a good way to describe us in the work that we're doing. And, you know, definitely, you know, working in all those areas of early ejaculation, sexual dysfunction, pain and penetration, orgasm issues, libido issues are all things that I work in pretty well nearly with all my clients. You know, I sort of call myself a bit of a libido expert because I really do have that ability to turn people's libido around. And I've, you know, had the great joy in teaching a couple of women to actually experience orgasm when they haven't been able to. So that's really good. But one of my most profound works that I do is around pain, painful penetration, and actually dissolving that pain with a sexological body work called vaginal mapping, where I work internally on the vaginal wall and we actually release that pain over several sessions. And every time I do that work, it completely and utterly blows me away with the shifts and getting women back into experiencing normal sex lives. And so many women, unfortunately, think that that's normal and put up with it.
Yes.
And when they have a conversation with you, they're like, oh, and they've got not, and doctors even don't have an awareness of that. You know, I went to a gynecologist not long ago for something for myself, just for a, you know, once off chat. And then I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm on my way now. I know what to do. And he was, the half of my consult was talking about the work that I did. He's like, oh, I want cards, you know, like to be able to send women to me that are experiencing that pain. So it's good that the other professions are starting to see that there's other professions that can complement what they're doing, especially when we're talking about a gynecologist or another instance of a urologist. Sent a man to me for a prostate massage because he was having prostate issues. He said, but don't tell anyone I said that.
I think that's it's around working holistically with that individual and that sometimes a team is what is required to be able to support that person on that journey, and that no one's modality is better than anybody else's, but we can all work together and in the best interest of that particular client. And I think it's quite exciting. You know, there's so many different things that are happening out there. There's so much more information. And on the issue of, you know, penetration, pain and penetration disorders, I was really blown away at the number of women who are experiencing it. And as you said, that is their norm. You know, they have experienced pain from their first experience of penetration, and they think that that's just the way it is. And sometimes it can be an incredibly simple fix. Sometimes it can be a bit more complicated, but just the number of women that are not actually reaching out for, or think that they are the only one, when it's, you know, it's actually not that uncommon.
No, it's not. And it's like, you know, my success rate with it's been pretty phenomenal. And you know, I've had probably my average is around 4 sessions to actually fix it. I'm currently with one client on the 7th session, but with her, there's a whole lot of other issues going on. And I'm at the point now of wanting to refer her on to some other people to do some clearings with her around some things. As we finish our actual coaching time and still working with the pain, I know that there's some other things in the way just because of her experiences and the being that she is. And that's fine. I'm happy to refer her on to other people. And, you know, I've got naturopaths and different other health practitioners that I send people to for other things that are a contribution, not the main thing, but, you know, in areas that, you know, I'm not the expert in those things. So I think, you know, a naturopath would be good for you for this or something rather for that. And I think that's important to not think that you're the only one that's got the answers. Certainly you're a great stepping stone, and hopefully you are the person that can resolve issues for them and get them back to living the sexual life and that they wish to be living. But sometimes, you know, you do need to bring in outside people, which is great. There's certainly people out there in the industry and doing different things that don't have that attitude, and that, to me, that's not looking at having the client's best interests at heart. And I think, you know,
exactly,
that's where you and I certainly are being in integrity and authenticity of who we are, and you know, ideally and ultimately working to get the client to where they want to be. I mean, my personal goal and passion is to turn everyone on, the whole world on, with one orgasm at a time, because imagine if everyone was having living in their orgasmic capacity, full capacity, there would be no time for war and hate and shit, you know, because we'd be all
exactly
juiced up on the
I
orgasmic
like
energy. That's my goal,
like
one orgasm
goals
at a time. Yeah,
yeah,
so
exactly.
We haven't got much longer to go, so I just want to ask you also, you know, what drives you? What's the things that really drive you? Why are you doing what you're doing?
I'm just passionate. I'm passionate about, you know, the LGBTI community.
Yeah.
I'm passionate about supporting people, you know, to explore their sensual potential, to remain, you know, sexual beings, to be able to have that sexual well-being in whatever form that looks like for that individual. Particularly with the work that I've been doing in the aged care sector around the LGBTI inclusivity work, I've heard some amazing stories on, you know, residential care settings supporting older people to remain sexual, even if the logistics of that particular residential setting, you know, are not very conducive. You know, they have conjugal suites, or they set, you know, many places couples are still separated and given two separate rooms, but they set one up as a lounge room and one up as a bedroom. And, you know, I have heard of some amazing things that are happening, but there's also still a long way to go. There's, you know, still a lot of people working in the aged care sector that are, you know, maybe a little bit old school, or maybe are coming from other cultures with different views around sexuality, where it's something that's not discussed.
Yeah.
And, you know, just think that old people don't have sex anymore. And
which
I just
is
think
so
that's really
not
bad.
True. Yeah,
I mean, know.
I've had a couple come to me that he was 75 and she was 74 and she was having pain, and sat down with her and said, "What's going on?" She went, "Well, I can tell you one thing, I was randy as hell and I just absolutely cracked up. It was just gorgeous. Here's this 74-year-old
yeah
woman complaining that she's as randy as hell, but it hurt." So
and I think
that
that's it. People forget. It's, you know, research has shown that people are still engaging in some form of sexual activity. Maybe they're not swinging from the chandeliers like they used to, but they're still engaging in some kind of sexual activity well into their 90s. If they're physically capable or if that's what they want to do. And, you know, how do we support people? I know I haven't got a particular date that I'm planning on stopping having sex when I get older. So, and that's what I say to workers in the sector, and they kind of go, oh no, no, I don't either. And it's like, well, why do you think that your clients would, you know? And and I get the whole, quite often when people think about older people having sex, they straight away go to, oh, my parents or my grandparents, I don't want to think about that. And it's like, you know, how about you take the personal out of it, and maybe, or even make it more personal and go, what if that was me? You know, would I want to, how do I want to express my sexuality as I get older? And, you know, that's something that I've become quite passionate about fairly recently as I've done more and more work in this area.
Yeah, I must connect you with a lady that I know that is doing amazing work with the elderly and sex. She's someone that I've been connected with for a long time through the Sweet Medicine Sundance Path, which is an area that I was an apprentice with for some years. And she's been doing a lot of work on that and has been moved to Sydney to lecture, I think, there. And I've been trying to get her online for an interview as well, but the timing, I don't think, is matching for her, because she's teaching and it has to be live.
Yeah.
It can't be pre-recorded. So I might nab her on another interviewing platform that I can pre-record, that I'm going to be looking at also jumping on in another month or two when my life, personal life, settles down a little bit with what I'm doing. So, remind me later and I'll connect you with her, because she's doing extraordinary work, and she's had a lot of press coverage on paper and radio, and I think even TV. She's gaining a lot of press with what she's doing. She might be doing a master's or a thesis or something connected with it as well. Not 100% sure there, but She's very up with it, and she's come from touch therapy to perhaps studying being a sexologist as well. She's just sort of the way and direction that she's moved. That would be a good source for you, especially if you're interested in that. So
That would be awesome. And I suppose the other reason why I'm so passionate, I come from a history of domestic violence and sexual abuse, and I know the impact that had on me for many, many years. Mm. I would have considered myself asexual, and that as I went on my journey of, you know, recovery and finding that sexual being that I had been previous to those experiences, that was very empowering for me. And that sort of kind of put me, as part of that was probably what put me on the path originally. And the work that I do in the LGBTI community, I see so many trans people that may never ever have the opportunity to have the body that they desire for many reasons, whether it's financial or medical.
Yeah.
And to be able to support them to be sexual beings in whatever works for them. And that's certainly something. That's an area that I see there's not a lot of information for individuals, that maybe they might go and have surgery and, you know, they have this new vagina or they have this new penis and they're told how to look after it, but they're not actually given enough information on how to function and then how to be sexual with that, or with the bodies that they were born with that for whatever reason they can't change and parts of their bodies that they don't like, they actually wish weren't there. And how do we support people that are in that particular headspace? So it's something that I'm seeing many, many different areas that, you know, are firing up my passion as I've been going on this journey. And who knows where it might take me.
Yeah, that's right. Who knows where it will take you indeed. So we're almost coming to a close. So before I say goodbye to you, I do need to plug the next interview that I'm doing. So I'm always excited about the guests that I have on my program and that I am able to secure, but I am beyond super excited about my next guest, which will be on Monday the 27th of February at 3 p.m. USA Pacific time and Tuesday the 28th of February 9 a.m. Queensland time. I'm going to be talking to Mookie Okan from Pussy Talks, and Mookie Okan is my first person that I went and did a spiritual sexuality course many, many years ago called the Kodoshkas, which she's a part of and teaches worldwide. And I looked at Mookie Okan as she was presenting and being who she was, and I looked at her because she's not much age difference in us. And I'm like, oh my God, here is this woman that is so in her essence of who she is as a sexual woman. I want to be like her when I'm her age. She just blew me away, and that was my introduction and what set me on the journey, unbeknown to me at the time, to do the work that I'm doing. So I am beyond excited about having Mookie Okan come on. And she's an Aussie who's been living in Phoenix in USA for many, many years, and she creates amazing workshops, and she's created a fabulous documentary, I think, called Pussy Talk. So we'll be having her on the show in 2 weeks' time. So stay tuned.
That sounds
tuned
very
for
exciting.
That one. I know. So I'm sure you'll be tuning into that one as well. So I guess we've got like just under 2 minutes to close. So is there anything final that you would like to quickly share or go, oh, I didn't mention that? You've got you've got 1 minute and 47 seconds to do that now. No pressure.
No, I would just think if people want to pop along to the Sensual Potential Facebook page or the website, it's www.sensualpotential.com.au. I try and post them in. I blog every couple of weeks on the website. There's a lot of different information there around a whole range of different topics that could be a starting point for people to get some information around the things that they're interested in. And I try and post interesting things on the Facebook page on a daily basis. Always up for people to ask questions. If there's something they particularly want to know, I'll see what research I can do and find some answers for them.
Great.
But thank you so much for having me on board, Pauline. It's been absolutely fantastic. I look forward to doing more things with you in the future.
Yeah, I do too. I'm really glad that we've done this because it just reminds me of there is a really nice connection with us, because that coffee was a very long time ago that we've both been doing. busy doing what we're doing. So, yeah, it's been really lovely talking to you. And as always, I could just keep talking to you for hours and hours and hours on end, like I have with my previous two guests. So thank you very much for giving me your time today and coming on air. And I'm sure, you know, there's people listening in quietly in the background, not making any sounds or noises or questions, that may have questions afterwards. So they will get the replay out in the next 48 hours or so, and they can go back in and listen and pick up any information that they might have missed. So sometimes it's good to re-listen. And thank you so much, Rochelle, for everything. And I'm going to say goodbye from Intimacy Whisperer. See you soon. Bye.
Bye.